Do you feel like you need God's encouragement and wisdom throughout the week to take hold of His promise to fly like an eagle? You've come to the right place. Welcome to Eagles on the Hill. Let's join our host, Pastor Jeff Shike.
Hey people, I'm your host, Pastor Jeff Shike. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the podcast. Today, we're going to have some fun together. We're going to talk about Earth Day and climate change. So strap yourself in. Here we go. Want to begin with the first Earth Day. Let's go back, way back, and take a look at the first Earth Day, Genesis chapter 1, verses 27 and 28. God created mankind in His own image. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female, He created them. Lots to talk about in those verses, but let's keep going. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Genesis chapter 1, verses 27 and 28. So that is the first Earth Day, in case you're wondering when the first Earth Day was. And notice in those verses, the first commandment is, well, we think of it as, "You should have no other gods before me." But the first commandment given to human beings was, "Be fruitful and increase in number." That's the first commandment. So we got to carry out that commandment. And the second commandment, like unto it, as Jesus said, is to care for the earth. So there's a priority there in those commandments. Humanity is the priority. The earth is secondary. The earth is given for in order that humanity might live on the earth. So we're going to talk about that priority a little bit later in the podcast. Just hold that thought for a moment. But let me say this. Because of those commandments of God in Genesis chapter 1, we Christians should be the best environmentalists. We should, beyond any other people, care for the earth. Why? Because it is our mother? No. The earth is not our mother, I like to say. I got another mother, and the earth is not it. But we should care for the earth because God's commanded us to care for the earth, and because the earth is given in order that it might bless human beings. Because humanity is the crown of God's creation. The last thing God created, male and female, Adam and Eve, human beings. So again, we're going to talk about that crown of God's creation in a little bit. So there you go. That gives us an introduction biblically to Earth Day as something, the earth is something, the universe is something we are called to care for in order that it might bless humanity, might sustain life that God has given. All right? Now, a lot of people, when they think of Earth Day, don't think of Genesis chapter 1, but instead, they think of something different. They think of 1970. 1970 was the first officially declared Earth Day, and since that time, a lot of good has been done. The early emphasis of Earth Day was a cleaning up of the rivers and streams and all of that kind of stuff, cleaning up of the air that we breathe, so lots of good things have been done. Of late, the focus is really climate change, and so that has come to dominate Earth Day. In fact, not only dominate Earth Day, but every day of the year. As some of you may know, I listen to, follow news from Israel quite closely, even maybe more so than news from the United States, and I was surprised slash not surprised, I'm not sure which, to find that about a week ago, the Knesset, the Israeli Knesset, which is their governing body, the Israeli Knesset, in the middle of, let's see, I think something's going on in Israel. I think there's a war in Gaza. Hezbollah's attacking from the north. Iran just attacked a couple of weeks ago. We got lots of things going on over there. And in the middle of all that, the Israeli Knesset had spent time debating climate change and how laws that should be enacted in Israel so that there would be less use of fossil fuels and less emissions, carbon emissions, in order that the planet might be saved. Now, I think, personally, the 11 million people that live in Israel, compared to the billions of people that live in the world, I doubt if those people can affect the climate. Number one. Number two, those people might not even be there if their country is not secure. They got bigger fish to fry, and yet they're worried about climate change in the midst of that. Well, do with that what you want. Anyway, a couple of things as I think about climate change and some predictions that science has made in the past. At the time of the first Earth Day, 1970, science was projecting global cooling. There was great concern over global cooling. Now, of course, the concern is global warming. The point of this, my pointing this out, is not to say that science is unreliable, but rather to say that science is, must be, if it's going to be good science, open to new data, open to new ways of analyzing that data. So, and science is not always settled, not always settled as we think. There's been a push over the last number of years to say, well, the science is settled. That happened a lot during COVID. And in fact, that's not how science works. Science is, well, it's not never settled, but oftentimes it is continually updated as we find new information, new data, and it has to be open to that. That's the point of that. Also, around 1970, 1968 to be exact, a book called The Population Bomb was released by Paul and Ann Ehrlich. And in that book, it said that in the 1970s, so projected just a few years out, hundreds of millions of people will starve to death because there's too many people on planet Earth. Well, of course, now there's billions more people on planet Earth and fewer are starving. We're not going to get into investigating why that is, but nevertheless, their prediction was completely 180 degrees out of phase. Now, in fact, we have concern about low birth rates around the world. So again, the point is not to say that science should be ignored, but the point is to say that science doesn't always have the last answer for us. Science, good science, is continually gaining more data, analyzing it more effectively, enabling us to come up with better answers, better solutions to what we're observing in the universe. So in this podcast, I'm going to leave it to you to find books and articles and shows that talk about the climate crisis and how humanity is destroying the planet by using too much fossil fuel and so forth. You will easily find those stories all over the place. And so I'm going to let you find those stories. My desire today in the podcast is to introduce to you, maybe for the first time, maybe not, another point of view, a point of view that does not deny that the climate is changing. So I want to be upfront about this, that this point of view that I'm introducing to you, or maybe you're hearing it for the second, third, fourth time, is not denying that the climate is changing. The climate is changing. The climate has always changed. Not denying that the climate even is getting warmer. Not denying even that humanity is affecting that climate change. All right. So just put that out there. So we, you know, don't want to be accused of being a climate change denier, you know, as they say. But what I want to do for you is something I don't know if I've ever done this on a podcast, but read two pages from the beginning of a book by Alex Epstein. And the book is called Fossil Future. And I read this book a couple of weeks ago, and it was intriguing to me. And so I thought I would share with you just two pages of the book here and get your thoughts on what he says. It was intriguing to me, got me thinking. And so that's part of the purpose of the podcast, is to get us thinking, thinking wisely as how we as Christians can best manage the gifts God's given to us. So here we go, pages 3 and 4 of the book, and then we'll stop and go back. All right. It's called Ignoring Benefits, Chapter 1, Save the World with Fossil Fuels. In this book, I'm going to try to persuade you of something that may seem crazy to you, something that definitely used to seem crazy to me. And I will say it was crazy to me as I started reading. I'm going to try to persuade you that if you want to make the world a better place, one of the best things you can do is fight for more fossil fuel use, more burning of oil, coal, and natural gas. Wow, how bizarre is that? I'm thinking as I begin to read the book. While we are almost universally told that more fossil fuel use will destroy the world, I'm going to make the case that more fossil fuel use will actually make the world a far better place, a place where billions more people will have the opportunity to flourish, including to pull themselves out of poverty, to have a chance to pursue their dreams, and, this will seem likely craziest of all, to experience higher environmental quality and less danger from climate. I'm not going to make the case for more fossil fuel use by making some climate change denier argument that fossil fuel CO2 emissions aren't impacting climate. I totally acknowledge that they have contributed to the 1 degree centigrade warming we've experienced over the last 100 plus years, and they will contribute to further warming going forward. But I will argue that the negative climate impacts of fossil fuels will be far, far outweighed by the unique benefits of fossil fuels. Fossil fuels, which provide 80% of the world's energy, have and will continue to have the unique benefit of providing low-cost, reliable energy to billions of people in thousands of places, a benefit that is desperately needed in a world where some 3 billion people still use less electricity than the typical American refrigerator. Contrary to claims that solar and wind are rapidly replacing fossil fuels, fossil fuel use is still growing, while intermittent solar and wind energy after generations on the market provides just 3% of the world's energy. And that 3% is totally dependent on fossil fuels, especially natural gas, for 24/7 backup. Solar and wind are nowhere near being able to replace the energy that fossil fuels provide today, let alone the far greater amounts of energy humanity needs going forward. One of the key benefits of more fossil fuel use, I will argue, will be powering our enormous and growing ability to master climate danger, whether natural or man-made, an ability that has made the average person on Earth 50 times less likely to die from a climate-related disaster than they were in the 1 degree centigrade colder world of 100 years ago. Because fossil fuel use is so vital to the world's future, I will argue today's proposed policies to rapidly eliminate fossil fuel use would, if fully implemented, have apocalyptic consequences, making the world an impoverished, dangerous, and miserable place for most people. And even if fossil fuel elimination policies are not fully implemented, which they won't be given the expressed intent of China, Russia, and India to increase their fossil fuel use, even widespread restrictions on fossil fuel use that fall far short of elimination will shorten and inflict misery on billions of lives, especially in the poorest parts of the world. Obviously, you would not want to participate in the movement to rapidly eliminate fossil fuel use if it actually meant inflicting these kinds of harms on other people. And you would want to fight for more fossil fuel use if it actually made the world a far better place. But is there any chance that I'm right? Pages 3 and 4, Fossil Future by Alex Epstein. There it is. It's kind of a, well, here's how thick it is, so you can kind of see. I was extremely skeptical, to say the least, as I read those first pages. I'm like, this guy's really crazy. But then I continued to read and found it very interesting. And one of the things that was interesting was he set forth this kind of framework for thinking about climate change and fossil fuel use and global warming and all of that. He said, our framework that we look at things is completely looked at through the anti-impact framework. In other words, we do not want to, at any cost, we do not want to impact the Earth, the climate, negatively. And so we need to evaluate things only through one lens, and that is, do they impact the climate? If they do, bad. If they don't, good. That's it. And he questioned that framework. Now, I don't know that Alex Epstein's a Christian or not. I have no idea. Actually, I didn't look it up if he's a biblical believer or not. But his framework, what he said was, we need to start looking at things differently. We need to look at things through the human flourishing framework, he calls it. We need to use or not use things based on whether they will enable humans to flourish, not just today, but flourish into the future. Will things enable humans to flourish? And in so doing, we need to look at both the positive and negative impacts of fossil fuel use, not just the negative impacts, that the way fossil fuel use might negatively impact the environment, but look at the positive impacts that fossil fuel use has on the environment. Look at the positive and negative impacts that fossil fuel use has on, even more importantly, human flourishing. Because you remember the first commandment, and this is where I'm taking this, Alex Epstein doesn't take it there, but remember the first commandment was to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. The crown of God's creation is humanity. It's not the planet. The crown of God's creation is humanity. How does what we do positively and negatively impact humanity today and tomorrow and far into the future? That needs to be our measuring stick by which we evaluate things. And not just fossil fuel use, but wind and solar and, yes, nuclear. We need to evaluate those things differently, perhaps, than we're evaluating them today. He says, today, We're only evaluating one thing, fossil fuel use. We're only evaluating its negative impact on the planet. We're not evaluating, for instance, wind and solar with respect to their negative impact on the planet, nor are we evaluating fossil fuel use based on its positive impacts, and not specifically the planet, important, but even more important, humanity. So, love for you to take a look at this book or other videos you can find online by Alex Epstein and others. There's many others making this case as well. Love to hear your feedback on this and see how we can be the best stewards of the environment that we can be, stewarding the environment, stewarding the earth in a way that focuses on human flourishing. And not just what we can take out of it today for ourselves, but even more importantly, how we can have humanity flourish 100, 200, 300, 1,000 years into the future. What's the best solutions for us today that will enable humanity to flourish, and not just flourish here in the United States, in the more wealthy part of the world, but flourish in the poor parts of the world as well. Love for you to have to study this further. Love for you to give me your feedback on this, as I'm processing myself, as I'm exploring myself, as I'm learning myself. Love to hear your feedback as well. That's what we got for you today on the podcast as we celebrate Earth Day together. I want to encourage you to write us at eaglesonthehill211@gmail.com. Let me know your thoughts. Let me know how this podcast and this learning might impact you going into the future. Remember that those who hope in the Lord will fly on wings like eagles. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.